Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Stephen Tyler O'Connor. Stephen is an LA-based casting associate and independent film producer. He's worked in casting for over 9 years, both at the network level, NBC New York, and production casting, Guthrie Goddard Smythe and Ofiero Horn Casting. He's worked on projects such as Parenthood, Community, Hannibal for NBC, Disney's Liv and Maddie, Casey Undercover, and Andy Mack. Stephen is also a principal producer of Chemically Altered Productions, and he's produced multiple award-winning short films, digital series, and feature-length independent films. He's also published a book on finances for teens and young adults. Stephen is a member of the Casting Society of America. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I want to say, like, long time, first time. Long time listener, first time guest.
I love that. I love that you listen to the podcast.
I love it. No, when you told me that you have the podcast, I immediately subscribed. And obviously, I used to work with Suzanne Goddard-Smythe, who you've had on it, and I worked on Liv and Maddie, so I know Joey, and I know Dove, obviously. It was like my almost birthday twin. We're both Capricorns.
That's
so
right.
It's funny, my old roommate was on a flight once that Dove was on, and she texted me, and she's like, I think Dove is on my flight. And so I texted Dove, and I was like, hey, are you on a plane right now? And she's like, yes,
Yes, you are freaking me out.
And I was like, oh, my roommate's on there. And she was like, well, tell her to come up and say hi.
That's so funny.
But I love listening to what they have to say, and I love listening to what you have to say, because I think it's such a great resource for a lot of people. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited that you're here finally. And it's so valuable to get, you know, I mean, number one, you're a really interesting person and you are incredibly accomplished for someone who's still in their 20s. And you've got this incredible perspective because of all the work you've done in the industry, not just in casting.
Yeah.
But in, you know, producing and writing and everything else. So coming from there, you know, the fact that you've gotten so much done in even not even quite a decade, almost a decade
almost.
At this point. Written the book, written and produced a number of films. You've been involved with professional casting for 9 years.
Yeah.
9 years. What drives you to be so prolific? I mean, that's pretty extraordinary.
I mean, I think part of it is, you know, I think my parents, growing up, my parents were solidly middle class. I grew up in Arizona, but we were like solidly middle class. Like my sister and I, and my younger brothers, like we never really went without, but it wasn't like when I went to high school and my, you know, 94 Honda Civic was parked in between a BMW and a Lexus. And when the girl who parked next to me crashed her car, she was like, I'll just have daddy buy me a new one. Like, that was not the world that I lived
not
in.
Not going to happen where you
I bought my own car and like the back door didn't open like from the outside, but like it was my car. So it was mine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like, especially when I reflect back, my parents sacrificed so much to give my siblings and I the opportunity to do whatever we wanted. And I think for me, I would just be spitting in their face if I wasn't pursuing what I really wanted. Like from as early as I can remember, I've always wanted to be in this industry and doing this thing. And so to not do that would be almost like to put their sacrifice in vain. My mom worked for 20 plus years at Home Depot, and that wasn't her passion. It wasn't what she like wanted to do with her life, but it provided her a good paying job to allow her kids to do what they wanted to do. So I had to, like, I feel like I have to pursue my own life and my own passion because of the sacrifices they've made.
You just totally gave me chills, and there's tears in my eyes right now, because really, that's so beautiful to me. You know, my parents, that describes my background very, very much. You know, my parents did things that they didn't necessarily always love because they were all about providing the opportunity for us to do what we loved, and in turn, you know, I certainly have put in my time, you know, doing everything I can to support my kids and their dreams. And it's really meaningful. It's the biggest thing. And I love kind of hearing the kid perspective is like, how could I not? How could I not?
And they gave me such an opportunity. I mean, I remember In retrospect, I started off doing community theater and theater in school, and I had an agent in Phoenix, and I booked some stuff here and there, and I booked photo shooty things, and so it's interesting because I have there are photos of me that will pop up randomly and be like, I saw a picture of you when you were probably in high school in this like ad, and I was like, oh.
So you were doing print work in Arizona.
Yeah, and just random stuff. And my parents allow me to do that, and I end up going to New York for one of those like big talent competition things that some people say is a scam, but now that I'm on this side, it's like, okay, well, that's like the one that I went to is a little bit more legitimate than I think some of the others. My parents figured out a way to like raise the money to send me to New York. I was 13. I went to New York by myself.
By yourself?
Luckily, there was another kid going that was around my age, and him and I got along really well. So his mom was like both of our chaperones.
That's amazing.
But they sent me there, and it's because I wanted to. I mean, I have like scoliosis. This is a really random tangent, but like I have scoliosis. So I had to get like a scan of my, like an x-ray of my back. And out of that x-ray, there was like, oh, there's this like dark spot on his lungs. What is this? And they were like, we don't know. So they did a CT needle biopsy. Come to find out, they're like, no, we don't know what it is. I was like, great. I hate needles. And I could have told myself, I don't know what it is. But I got out of that surgery because they put me completely under. I got out of that surgery at maybe like 4 in the afternoon. And I remember I had like my final interview for the thing, if I wanted to go to New York or not. And I had to show up to this interview. And I was so tired because I essentially, you're supposed to sleep off those, like the anesthesia. But I had to make it to this meeting. I had to be there. So they like, I got discharged. I slept in the car. I got there and I struggled through this meeting, but I had to be there. I had to do it. And then my parents found, I think it was like $2,000 for me to go, which isn't like a terribly large amount of money in the grand scheme of things. But when you have 3 kids and you're solidly middle class, like it's not like they just had that
it's
lying
not
around.
Lying around. Yep.
And they sacrificed and they did that to get me to go to New York. And I loved that experience. But it's like, I see those sacrifices that they did and especially knowing my mom's story, my mom's youngest of 6 girls. And my grandmother was a single parent. So to raise these girls and to see what my aunts had to go through to make their own lives, and that my mom has an ability to try and open herself up to allow me to live my life. Like, I feel like I owe it to them.
Yeah.
They made these sacrifices so I could do what I want to do. And I still want to do it, which is the good thing. Because there are some people get in this industry and they realize you don't want to do it. And then you go and do something else.
Well, it's not always what you think it's going to be. I mean, you can't really know what it's like until you step into it, you know?
Absolutely. And what's interesting about this industry compared to other industries is if you tell somebody, like, I'm going to go be an accountant, and then they go and they go to accounting school and they go and be an accountant on something, and then 2 years into it, they're like, this is not, I hate accounting. Everyone that you tell that you hate accounting to and that you're leaving, they're like, oh, I totally get it. I would never want to be an accountant. But in this industry, it's this really weird thing. If you, like, I really want to be an actor or really want to be whatever in this industry, and you go and do it, and then you realize, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. There's this, like, stigma associated to it.
Like you failed.
Like you failed. Yeah. And it's like, no, I just tried this thing, and now I don't like that, and I'm going to be happier doing this other thing.
Yeah. It's legit.
Yeah. I don't know what the double standard is about our industry, but I've, ever since doing that and doing community theater and even when I was in high school, I was working at a bar in town as a busboy. And on Friday nights, I would work from 4 p.m. until like 2:33 in the morning. And then I'd be up Saturday morning at 6 to work from 6:30 to 4. Because then I would rush home, shower, and then rush to the community theater where I was doing the show. And I had one show on Sunday night and then one show Saturday night and 2 shows on Sunday morning. But like, on top of going to high school full time, it's like, but that's what you do when you're loving what you do. You make those sacrifices and who needs sleep, right? But like you do that. And so
I thought that when I was your age. Okay,
yeah.
Steven.
You can. But it's like when you're that young and you have the ability, and it's like, so I've always wanted to do it. And so many people are like, oh, I could never do that. I need I could not have that crazy schedule on my weekends. And I was like, okay, but that's you and this is me and I want to do this. So it's always been
drive.
A part of me.
Yeah, drive. Well, I don't know anybody who has succeeded in this industry without that kind of drive.
Well, there's also this level of, like, and I know that this has been touched on in previous episodes of yours, but, like, it's the funny anecdote in this industry of if you can do anything else, if you'd be happy doing anything else, go do that. I can't be happy doing anything else. I mean, I used to be a manager at a bank, and I learned a lot, and I'm glad that I had that experience when I was in high school, but that's not gonna fulfill me.
Yeah.
This fulfills me. At one point, I was living in New York. Out of high school, I moved to New York City for 6 years. Like, fresh out of high school. At one point, there was 9 of us living in a 2-bedroom apartment.
Woo.
And you deal with that with one bathroom. With one bathroom. But you deal with it because, I mean, especially at the time, I was, like, 19. Yeah, I was like 19. And so you're young and you can deal up with a lot more when you're younger.
True.
But like, I see it as an adventure.
Yes.
And I don't want to do anything else. I tell my best friend constantly, he teaches theater at the high school that we graduated from. And I think it's so great. And we need the arts education. And he's such a good teacher. Like, I wish he was my teacher when we were in high school. Mm. But he gets to live in the town that he grew up in, and he can do his job anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't do that. I couldn't live that life. That's not for me. I have to be here or in New York or, you know, on set somewhere. Like, that's what's going to fulfill me. And that notion of I can't do anything else is you need to have that passion for whatever you do.
I agree completely. Well, how did you get started in casting? Because there's a bunch of different ways to be involved in this industry if you're passionate about it. And you've been making a living in the casting department for a long time now.
Yeah.
How did that start?
So I went to an acting conservatory in New York City, and we needed an internship in order to graduate. And I already had my internship hours, actually, already, because I'm a goody-two-shoes like that. And, like, I did all my internship hours in the summer between my first year and my second year. But this internship opportunity came up at CBS in Amy Herzig's office, and the registrar pulled me aside and she was like, you should apply for this. This could be a really great opportunity. And so I did, and I applied for that. I got the internship. I interned for CBS, and I actually started, in 2008 with the writer's strike.
Oh.
So it was really interesting because we were working on pilots weren't affected by the strike because the material was already written, so
right.
We could still pursue it. So I did that. I got to meet Gina Davis, which was really cool.
Yes.
Amy Herzig came into the office and she was like, who wants to go to set today? And we went like to BFE Brooklyn in like, it took us like an hour and a half to get there from Midtown. But I got to meet Gina Davis and Matthew Lillard, and I thought that was really cool. And I loved Gina Davis. I loved her in the show Commander in Chief, where she played like the first female president.
She's amazing.
And like the thing that I loved about it, cause I was in school, was they were doing a scene in the kitchen and she had a conversation with Matthew Lillard. She had to turn away, walk through the kitchen, grab her coffee cup that was on the counter and then turn around onto the island and then continue having a conversation with Matthew. And they'd be doing the scene and there'd be a couple times where she would forget to grab the coffee mug. And I loved seeing her, like she would mess up. Like, she's a human being. She would forget to do that. And then she would swear, and then they would go back, and they would just start over again and do it. But it was all light, and, like, it was lovely. So I got that
energy.
Made
it real for you.
Made it real. I was like, oh, wait, I don't have to be perfect.
Oh.
Because even Gina Davis is messing up.
Who's also, by the way, like, Mensa.
Yeah. Who's, like, a genius. So I interned at CBS, and then I had a job at a restaurant, and the economy tanked in 2008 and the restaurant that I worked at closed. And I was really close to having to move out of New York and move back to Arizona. And I started getting desperate and I reached out to everybody that I had like worked with before. And luckily NBC was looking for a casting assistant and CBS knew about it, and so they recommended me for it. And somebody that I worked with at CBS called me and said, hey, we just sent your resume over to NBC. And while I was still on the phone with CBS, NBC was calling to bring me in. I went in that day and interviewed, and I started the next day.
What a relief that must have been.
It was such a relief, and I actually had a job. I wasn't an unpaid intern anymore. Like, it was a job. And I worked on, that first year, I worked on Trauma, Parenthood, Community, 100 Questions for Charlotte Banks, but then it just became 100 Questions. This other pilot called State of Romance, which I thought was really funny, and it didn't get picked up. But it was great, and that started my 4 years at NBC.
Wow.
And it was crazy, and I was still, at the time, I was still wanting to pursue acting, but I was like, well, this is a job, and it paid me well, I could pay my rent. And then during my time at NBC, I started producing my own stuff. And the job at NBC allowed me to do it. I also, because pilot season is crazy amount of hours. There were years through pilot seasons that I was working 90 hours a week.
Oh.
90 plus.
What?
And luckily for me, as an assistant, I wasn't salaried. So I was making a lot of money for like 3 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And again, my financial background coming into play here, I paid off my first year student loan within 4 years of graduating.
Wow.
Now, I still have like my other loans for my second year, and that's like significantly lower, but I made sure that I paid all my bills, and then all the extra money that I was making, I just put it to my loans and I paid it off, and I don't regret doing that because it's a significant burden less on me than
People in the arts are particularly vulnerable to the student loan situation. It kills me and it breaks my heart, and I want to do some work in the future about this. But to see actors in particular, you know, with these crippling student loans, and you know, man, paying those things off, given how the industry works, that's quite a burden.
It is, and it's one of those things, like, it only really benefits the people who make a certain level of success. Or not benefits people, but like the only people who can really pay for it and not have to worry about are people who have such a high level of success. And it's, student loans can be so crippling. And the one thing that I will say, though, not to defend student loans at all or defend the predatory lending practices of these banks, but it's like, the thing is, you have to bet on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I knew full well I was taking out all these loans. It was going to take me a long time to pay it off. I knew that all going in, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a level like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be so successful that like, it doesn't matter. Whether that's naive or not, I don't know. I'm also a super realist, but I am cautiously optimistic about everything. I'm betting on myself more than me being a pessimist.
I like that. Well, and you have to have that. To me, that's like a precondition to the possibility of success. Like, there's no, to me, in my experience, there's no possibility of success if you're going to hang out and be a pessimist all day. Like, you won't see the road when it opens up in front
Absolutely.
Of you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Won't even see it. So, can you describe what you do as a casting associate? I mean, this is probably a mysterious job to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So, technically, I think the full title is like associate casting director.
Sorry.
No, but everybody calls it a casting associate.
They do, but
so it's weird because it's,
you belong to the Casting Society of America.
Yes.
You're a full-fledged.
I'm a CSA member in the, like, I'm an associate level CSA member, but it's
sure.
Interesting. We call it casting associate, but it's really an associate casting director.
Thank you for pointing that out.
I don't know who transposed it. I don't know who was in charge of that. I was not asked.
People call casting directors casting agents all day long too. It's the
that,
same thing, right?
That makes me want to pull my hair out.
They're not agents.
We're not. And it's one of those things, like, there's a level of like, oh, your greenness is showing when you say that. Or when somebody says, I have a reoccurring role. No, you don't.
Ouch.
You have a recurring role. What's the other one? There's another one that, there's something else that's like, oh, when you get casted.
No,
in something.
Nobody gets casted.
Nobody gets casted in anything. You got cast in something.
Okay, everybody taking notes, right? No such thing as a casting agent. You don't get casted, and there's no reoccurring roles.
Yeah, it's just recurring. actually saw, and I literally saw a resume today of somebody said that they were on a show and they had the wrong network associated with that show. And I wanted to say something, but they weren't like terribly good. And I was like, ugh, I don't want to get into this conversation with this actor.
In other words, the
cast, make sure your resume's right.
Yeah. Wow. Ouch.
So I'm an associate casting director, or I'm a casting associate, and I'm in this weird in between of like, I'm not an assistant. So usually I'm not the first line to like answering the phones or the scheduling.
You're not behind the desk when people step in and sign up.
Exactly. But I'm also not the casting director. Mm-hmm. It's not my office. I'm not the boss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this weird in between, and different offices operate differently, but we get a new script in. I will look at it and see, oh, who are the new roles? I'll pull sides. I'll pull like, okay, we have this new role of Agent X. So I go through and I make the audition material for Agent X and any of the new characters. I will send that off. I'll type up a breakdown. We will get the breakdown approved by our producers and by our network. I'll release the breakdown. And then I work in conjunction with the casting directors to decide who to bring in. I just did a thing for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee for the Not the White House Press Correspondents Dinner. And
wow.
I loved it. And that was something that I was fully in charge of. So I put out the breakdown. I chose the actors. I brought the actors in. I chose the people that I were like, these were the best, what we call our selects. I sent my selects to my team. And then my team told me, these are the people that were hiring. So there's a level of like, I do some assistant-y work, mm-hmm. Like in the realms of like actually hiring. I'm the one that puts out the emails to the agents being like, we'd like to hire them. And this is what the offer is.
Yeah.
And then I do some of the casting director stuff of choosing the actors. And then I'm in the room, I'm reading with them, and I give them like redirects and whatever I think it needs. If you're someone that's going to be right for the role, I'm in the room actively helping you try and get that job.
So let's just take a moment to say this right now. It is true that casting directors and casting associates want the actor to get the role. Like when the actor steps in, you're on their team, right?
Literally all I want. I want you to walk into the room and like be my answer. I want you to come in and do such a good job. I want it to be so you that I can circle your name after you leave the room and go, oh, thank God, I at least have somebody. Because that's all I'm thinking about during this process, especially if you start off and you have like a couple of people that just, they're not hitting it or they're just not right. You're like, oh no, is this harder than I thought it would be? And then when you have somebody who comes in and just like knocks it out of the park, you're like, oh yes, thank you. Somebody gets it. Because a lot of it is we just want something to come in and just be it. I don't want you to come in and be Agent X. I want Agent X to be in you. Like, I don't want you to be, or I should say, I don't want you to become Agent X. I want you to be Agent X. Like, there's that level of, you don't need to come in and transform yourself. Like, you're not Meryl Streep. Like, and even then, I love Meryl Streep, but she has made some questionable choices. And I'm like, really? What's that? But I still went and saw it.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep, still, it's grounded. It's a version of her. She brings whatever it is about this character out in her, and she is this character. I don't need you to become something. I want you to be it. And then let us and let our producers decide, do we want this version?
Yeah.
I can't remember whose podcast was. I don't know if it was Dove's or Joey's, but they were talking about coming in and not wanting to think of yourself as a product. I think it was Dove.
Sounds like her.
And I agree, and I understand where Dove is coming from with not wanting to. You have to. It can be really depressing on your psyche to think of yourself as a product.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, my counter to that on her would be, it's easier for me to think of myself as a product because there's so much rejection. So I tell people, like, come in, and you are bringing, like, for me, I'm bringing Steven Tyler O'Connor, the brand, to you. And if you hire me to do this role, this is how I'm going to do it. And then I leave it at that. So that way, if they don't hire me, they're not hiring me as a person because they don't like me. They're not hiring me as the brand because I'm Pepsi and they want to buy Sprite.
Yep.
Or I'm whatever brand name of something and they wanted my competitor. And for me, at least, I can deal with the rejection a little bit better that way.
It's like it depersonalizes it a little bit.
Exactly, because it's not like we're not, very rarely are we not hiring an actor because we don't like them as a person. Because if I don't like you as a person, I'm probably not bringing you into audition. Like, if I have that strong of an opinion about you as, like, a human being, I'm not going to give you the audition to begin with. So for me, I want you to come in and I want you to be it. I want you to be it. Because then I can be like, oh, we have somebody.
And now we can build around that.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. Thank you for like running with that. Because I want all the young actors listening to this to take that to heart. Casting is on your side. They want you to kill it.
Yeah. And another, it's, yeah, we want you to do it. Because also, if you come in and you kill it, that makes our job so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're helping us because now that's one less role we have to worry about this week, or it's one less thing that we have to worry about.
Well, and let's go a little further now on this. So say somebody comes in and they kill it. They just like, oh man, they just knocked your socks off. You're in love with them. You're so happy. They nailed it. But then things that are out of your hands, like,
so many things.
Networks, whatever.
We could send it to our producer and our producer could be like, no, I'm not feeling it. And then usually the response when we get that email back is everybody in the office who works on that project is like, what are you talking about?
How can you not feel this?
Like, how can, are you crazy? So that could happen. Our producer could not like them, not respond.
Mm-hmm.
Or our producer likes you and we can't send anybody in a vacuum. We can't just send one person to...
Nope.
To the network for approval. The only time you can do that is if it's like a major celebrity. Like, oh, we need somebody to play Dev's mom. Oh, Meryl Streep's available and she's interested. Like, you can send Meryl Streep alone to the network for approval if she'll do it.
Right.
But most people we're auditioning are not Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep has not endorsed any of these plugs, by the way. I don't know why she's on my mind. Well, she's great. That's why.
She's just kind of, yeah.
But, like, we can't send anybody alone. So we have to send a couple of choices. So sometimes what happens is we send two or three choices to the network, and they approve one person over the other, because what networks do, and they're so sneaky about it, is they'll be like, oh, we really like this person, but there's a role on this other show that we're doing, and so we're not going to approve them for this show. We're going to steal them for their other show.
I've seen that happen.
And it's so frustrating, because especially when it's an actor that the network didn't know beforehand. So it's like, I'm introducing this actor to the network.
And they're basically poaching.
And they're poaching. And I'm like, no, I want the credit for this.
Yeah, you don't get it either.
So sometimes that happens. But also, like, who knows why the network approves or doesn't approve somebody.
Sometimes, like, it's super capricious, like, you know, the actress looks like his girlfriend from high school that dumped him, and so he's got this visceral response,
yep,
and he's never going to approve it.
And
stuff like that. Crazy
you
stuff.
You can't fight it. I mean, then there's other things. Like, I worked on this one role for the season finale of my show that we shot a couple months ago. And we saw all these people, and then we sent all these choices, and then at the point where the network got involved, the network all of a sudden was like, oh, everybody needs to be under 4'11". Well, that was not told to us.
Oh.
So now, of all the choices that we sent, everybody that was over 4'11 was immediately cut. And in casting, if we knew that in advance, we wouldn't have auditioned you.
No, like, and then meanwhile, these poor actors who know they nailed it. And
especially if we tell
it.
Them in the room, because there's times, like, at least our office, we will tell them, like, that was great, like, mm-hmm, we love it. And you have to believe casting when we say that we love it. If you end up not getting a callback or you end up not getting the job, it has nothing to do with you. We're not lying. It's just we really like you. And I tell people, too, like, it's all about booking the room and not the job. It's obviously great to book the job. But if you book the room, if you make fans out of the casting directors or the associate or the assistant or whomever you're in the room with, that's what's important. Because then they're going to remember you for other things. So, like, we want you to come in. We want you to do well. But also, like, there are so many things outside of your control. You could be too tall or too short. You have red hair. And the boy that we've cast, the other guest star that we've cast, has red hair, too. And we're not trying to make a thing about red hair. Or you're blonde and you kind of look like our lead. And that's going to be kind of confusing. So we can't do that. or.
Yep.
There's so many things that are outside of your control. The only thing you can control is, like, being on time, being prepared, and being professional. You want to, and if you book the job, you want to go to set, you want to be on time, you want to be prepared, you want to be professional, and you want to be fun to work with. You want people to have such a good time on set that they want you back.
Now, that doesn't mean telling jokes all day long, does it?
No, absolutely not. Do not do that. Just be a team player. Go with the flow. The story that I tell after friends of mine, Bellamy Young on Scandal, she plays Melly. That character was only supposed to be like a two, three episode guest star. And then Bellamy Young showed up and was so amazing. And clearly she was fun to have around on set, or she wasn't a problem, that she's now a series regular, and spoiler alert, she's now president. So it's like, that doesn't happen if you're on set and you're causing problems and you're not delivering. Like, you need to show up and you need to do the job.
Yep.
But if you're chill and you're fun and you're just, like, easy to be around and you're not causing any problems, you're probably going to be asked back. And I worked on Casey Undercover as a script coordinator, and which meant I was working in the writer's room with the writers, and we had an actress come in, and she was supposed to be, like, another character's mom, so she was just in one scene, and she came in, and she was hysterical. That immediately after she came to the table read and killed it at the table read, we went back to the room and were like, okay, what other episodes can we start putting her in? She was so funny and she was so good that we as the writers were like, oh, this gives us stuff that we can work with, that we can put her in these other things. That's what you want to do.
That's what happened with Kurt on Liv and Maddie.
That's exactly what happened with Kurt on Liv and Maddie. He came in and he was just so funny. What, his character ended up being Johnny Nimbus.
Johnny Nimbus.
Because I think the original character's name was like Gusty Winds.
Which, yes,
like,
yes, yes.
Honey and Ridiculous.
They changed
but
it.
Like, he came in and he was fun. And like, and notice how he came around. Randomly, the writers found a way to bring him back.
Over and over and over and over again.
Over and over again. Why? Because he was funny. He delivered. And clearly he was fun to have around on set.
Yep.
And that's what you want. That's the only thing you can control. You can't control that we've hired a love interest and she's 5'2". So if you're 6'1", it's just going to be weird.
It happens in real life every day, but on film it doesn't.
On film it looks weird.
Yep.
And you can't control that.
Yep.
You can't control that. Or a myriad of other things that are outside of your control that you can't do. We don't want somebody with blue eyes. We want somebody with brown eyes, and we don't really want to deal with contacts. It's a myriad of things that could happen that are outside of your control. And just, like, you have to let it go a little bit.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for running with that. So all of that just implies, too, that if you knock it out of the park and you book the room, maybe you don't book the role for reasons that are 1,000% outside of your hands and outside of the hands of casting, by the way.
Yeah.
But you book the room and you impress yourself on casting. Casting will remember you and will call you in another time for another role. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I make the joke that I have a binder full of women.
Some people will catch that. Most of you may not, but that was great.
but I do it because I have, I keep my files in a couple of different ways. If they're adults or if they have Twitter, when I watch TV, if there's a guest star that really surprises me or does a really great job, I'll see if they're on Twitter. If so, I have like an actor's list on Twitter. So I don't have to necessarily follow them, but they're on a list so I can go through and remind myself of them if I'm looking for something.
That's brilliant. Okay, everybody get on Twitter if you're not.
Right? And when you book something, make sure that your profile says, like, so-and-so in this. So that way, if there's 10 of you, I make sure that I'm following the right one.
Good.
But I also do, like, if you come in, always bring hard copy. For me, this is my own personal mantra. Always bring a hard copy headshot.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a lot of actors that'll say, keep it. I don't need it. But it's because I know I already have it. And I know that headshots cost money. Like, I don't want you to give me a headshot. And if I already have it in my files, unfortunately, I'm just going to throw that headshot away. That's a waste of money on you. If I know I have it, I don't need it. But bring it just in case. Because also, sometimes maybe we're going right into a producer session right afterwards, and I need your headshot, and boom, it's right here.
And you can pin it up on the wall there.
Exactly. So always have it. Let casting say they don't need it. But I'll go through, and I will go through at the end of my sessions, and the people that I didn't know beforehand or what have you, like the people who really impressed me that day, I will keep their headshots, and I will put it in my files. And then I, whenever, oh, I have this new role, and I need to go find somebody, I'll pull out my binder, and I'll go to the age group, and I'll just, like, start flipping through and be like, who could be right for this? So that's how I keep my files. Plus, I travel the festival circuit a lot with my films, and I have, like, a document going of people that I saw in a movie, and I'll go in, I'll add in their name and their agent, because I'll look them up on IMDb, and then I'll say, okay, I saw them in this movie at this film festival. I really liked them. And then I just keep track of them that way. But, like, us in casting, we're always constantly looking for people.
That makes me so happy to hear, because, you know, I don't think actors really understand how hard you guys work to know who's out there. It's not just that you're sort of sitting there randomly, passively waiting for agents to send you people.
No.
Not at all.
There's so many times on breakdowns, we have something called, like, casting director selects. And so I'll put out a breakdown for something, and I can wait and see if somebody gets submitted. But most of the time, like, especially if I know the actors, I've already, when I hear about this role, I've already started making my own, like, list in my head or at my desk of, like, oh, I want to make sure I audition these people. And sometimes those people don't get submitted.
Ugh.
And so then I'm going in and I'm adding them into my submission so I can schedule them. Because for me, if I've auditioned you before and I think you're great, I want you to book a job. So I'm going to keep trying to bring you in until I book something. And that happened to me on last season on one of my shows. Like, I met this kid at a workshop, and then I auditioned him, like, 5 or 6 times, and then he finally booked something on the show, and I was, like, so excited that, like, he finally booked it. But it's like I was constantly being like, yes, we need to bring him in. There are people that when you get excited about people, you want to bring them in for anything that they're right for. Plus, if you've auditioned for me already and I thought you were good, then I know that you're probably going to deliver again. So it eliminates the opportunity for me bringing in an actor that I don't know who's maybe going to come in not prepared or not going to do well. And, like, that's just...
They're more of a wild card. Somebody that you've seen 5 or 6 times, you know, who may feel like, oh my gosh, why am I going in again? They never book me. You're just waiting for the thing to fall into place because
exactly.
You're trying so hard to get them
and
booked.
It's not casting who's not booking you.
No.
It's so many other things. But, like, if you keep getting called into an office, you're doing something well. So know that it's just a matter of time.
Thank you for that. People all over are, like, breathing a little bit more now.
good.
What is the difference between casting a pilot and casting for a show that's already filming?
Sleep. having a life. No, I mean, I jokingly say that, but I'm also kind of serious. So for anybody who don't know, so you get a pilot is the first episode of a potential series. And what networks will do is they'll choose a couple of pilots that they're going to pick up and cast, and they'll film the pilot, and then they do test screenings and market screenings to see if people respond to that show. And then they pick up some shows, and they don't pick up other shows. So when you're casting a pilot, you're casting, in theory, people that we're going to be living with for the next 7 years, potentially.
Conceivably. If it's Disney Channel, 4 years max.
Exactly. Well, not necessarily max. 4 years on with that name until they slightly change it and spin it off into another show.
That's another story.
Right?
Yes.
But you're casting a world and people that you're going to be living with for a long time. And there's a lot more that goes into it than what would go into just casting a guest star. So there's a lot of, you have to audition a lot. Disney is a big fan of audition everybody. No stone unturned. Other networks, especially during pilot season, are a little bit more like, oh, you want to offer it to this person or this celebrity, or, oh, you've seen somebody and, oh, they really get the material. Great, let's lock them in before we lose them. Which I wish Disney was a little bit more like.
They have kids, though. The problem with kids is that they don't have track records, most of them.
Yeah, but my belief is if they connect with the material so strongly, that there's something to that.
Yeah.
So what you do for a serious regular role, we'll audition close to 1,000 people plus for a role.
My jaw is dropping, if anybody. You can't see this because this is a podcast. My jaw is just dropping.
We will audition, and I'll have a list. We have something in casting called the status list, and it just keeps track of who everybody is. My status list can be 50-plus pages long, and then a status list is literally just a list of names of people that we've auditioned or people that have self-taped, and we watch all of these self-tapes, and then we give notes to people that we think are good, and then we do callbacks with producers, and then we do callbacks with the network, and there's a lot that goes into it, and then we'll probably do chemistry reads to make sure that the friends, like the friends, if friendship is integral to it, like we want to make sure the friendship is strong.
You need to feel like friends. They need to feel like they're friends. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a thing. Yeah.
And if it's a family, you want to make sure that the family has the right dynamic and make sure that everybody kind of like, that everybody kind of clicks together. Luckily, Dove clicked with herself. Because I don't know what would have happened if she didn't.
Well, she wasn't auditioning to be twins at that time.
At the time, no, I know, which is so crazy, which I didn't know because I didn't come on to Liv and Maddie until after Bits and Pieces. But chemistry and the relationships everybody has, it has to be believable. And in the realms of, like, when we were doing the pilot for Andy Mack, or it was called Andy Land at the time, and we had Peyton, and then we had to find somebody who looked like her, and, like, luckily we found Lilan, who looked just like her and was so good, and Lilan was just so perfect for what we were looking for. Now, given we found her and we spent 3 months trying to find somebody else and we almost lost her, there was a part of me that was like, I hope we do lose her.
Because this is ridiculous.
This is like, I hope they learn their lesson. And then there's also a part of me like, no, we can't lose her. She's the best one. Like, let's not know. But that's where, especially in a family, you want to find the people who mesh. And if it's a friendship, you want to make sure the friendship chemistry is there. So there's a lot that goes into it, and there's a lot of callbacks and a lot of callbacks on callbacks, producers and network and the network. And then, oh, we got to add this person in because they couldn't make it to the first one.
That happens a lot.
And there's a lot of hoops to jump through compared to a series. Once you're picked up to a series and you go, then you don't have as much time. I'll get a script a week and a half before that role starts to work. Now, given it's just a guest star, or a co-star, so can they, if it's a co-star, can they deliver that line believably? If it's a guest star, can they handle this material? And then usually somebody will recur if they're good. A lot of that is in kids. Sometimes when you're dealing with, like, adult shows, like, they will build, oh, we have a villain this season, and so it's going to be a 6-episode arc. But that usually goes to actors who have, like, an established resume to them. But those are treated a little bit like series regulars because you know it in advance and the network is aware and we have to live with them for a certain amount of episodes. But usually with guest stars, it's can you deliver what this scene wants or what this script needs from you? And if you can, then hopefully you'll recur. And if you can't, no big deal. You did that episode. The writers will find another role that they're going to want to try and have recur.
For sure. And at the same time, I think most guest stars, by their nature, are probably not designed to be recurring because of just the script, right?
And they can't be. They can't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
think
they can't. We can want them. We can want them to recur, but we don't own them. Like,
yeah.
On Liv and Maddie, we owned Dove. So, hey, Dove, we need you to shoot this thing. Okay, like
it's what she's gonna do.
It's what she's gonna do. She signed the contract.
Yep.
With a get or like you have your production schedule. Is Dove available week 2? Yes, she's available because she signed a contract. And that's just the nature of it. Whereas, is Jessica Marie Garcia available? Well, I don't know. We don't own her. She could be shooting something else.
She's shooting in the middle right now.
Exactly. So that's what we do. We'll then check their avail. And if they're available, we can pin them. And then that just says, hey, we have some interest. So if something comes up for them, let us know. And then if we get approval to hire them, then we can put out an offer to hire them. But we don't own them unless we hire them, which sounds so bad. It's like this
owning
people. But essentially what we're saying is we're buying your time and we haven't bought her time yet. We can just see if she's available. Now, let's say that she is available. And obviously, Jessica's a good example because she recurred so many episodes.
She was practically a series regular.
Practically a series regular and not getting paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
but let's say yeah. It's episode 36 that she's doing. And let's say something else comes along that they want her for, but she has this relationship with Liv and Maddie. She might choose Liv and Maddie over the other thing. Or she could tell us, hey, this is a really big deal. I want to do it. And then our production, because we love her so much, can work around it. Now, I don't know if that happened, actually. So, like, don't take that to the bank. Don't say, like, I'm not trying to show up third person at Jessica because I love her.
I don't know if it happened either, but it wouldn't surprise me if it happened.
Actor A, who recurred for us for a long time, they might make themselves available to us, but they don't owe us anything. So that's the hard thing about guest stars, because you could have a guest star and they could go off during pilot season, they could book a series.
Or book a movie that takes them to Romania or something.
Exactly. So they're not available to us. And we as the writers, yeah, that could be a bummer, especially if they're great. But we don't own them. We haven't bought their time. So we have to be understanding. It can still suck, but we have to be understanding. Series regulars, you're signing your life away when you sign that test deal.
For whatever that contract says, X many years with an option for Y.
Yeah. And so that's the main difference, is with the guest stars, you have the flexibility to go off and do other things. You hope that you impress them enough that they can bring you back. Or you hope that your character doesn't die. I had a friend who did an episode of a network procedural drama. And I was like, oh, that's great. I was like, is there any possibility that you could recur? And she was like, watch the episode. And I did. The episode is her, like, she was stabbed and is like slowly dying during her scene. I was like, oh, so I guess you're not going to recur.
Not recurring.
but she obviously knew that going into it.
Right.
But yeah, you hope that you can recur. But the reason that a lot of shows have multiple recurring characters is because you're trying to shoot something and you may not be available that time. So, okay, let's go use this other recurring character for this episode because we need to fill out the world, but we don't own them. We only own our series regulars. And that's only a small amount of people when you think about everybody in the cast.
Yeah. No, when you think about the sort of the universe that a show occurs inside of, you only have like a given of a handful of people and the rest of it's all like, are you around? Are you free? Are you available? Literally. What do you look for when an actor walks into your casting office?
I'm looking for somebody who has the confidence, but I'm really just looking for them to be this person. I don't want you to transform into a character. I want you to be this person because everybody is unique and special and different. And I know you've talked about this before. Just because we're special doesn't necessarily mean anything, but like we're all individual and we're all different. I could give the same scene, and I mean, this is literally what I do for a living, give the same scene to 60 different people and they all do it a completely different way. What I want you to do when you're one of those 60 people is not come in and try and be what you think I'm looking for. Be you. Be what is interesting about you, because I'm going to do it one way and you're going to do it another way, and have a point of view about what you're talking about. Like, I have, okay, and this is an example I use when I teach a lot. Everybody has an opinion about things, whether it's rational or irrational. There is a parking lot around the corner from my house, or around the corner from my apartment, for the grocery store. And unless you're going to this grocery store at like 2 a.m, it is always a nightmare trying to get in, trying to park, trying to get out. Like, it is a nightmare, and I hate this parking lot. With the fire of 1,000 suns.
Would that be a Trader Joe's parking lot?
Surprisingly, no. There was this really funny Twitter thing that was like, Trader Joe's, what's the parking lot like? Realtor, oh, it's a nightmare. Trader Joe's, I'll take it. But like that I have such a strong opinion and point of view about this parking lot, which is ridiculous and stupid and whatever. But I have an opinion about it.
Right.
You need to have an opinion about everything you're talking about in a scene. Because guess what? If it didn't mean something, if it wasn't interesting, it wouldn't be in the script. So have an opinion. I want you to come in and just have an opinion about what you're saying and what you're doing. And I want you to just be this person. Show me what this character is in you. And then I'm going to see what it's like in everybody else. And you're not going to be right for everything. I'm never going to go out for, like, the jockey football player character. But if I ever had to audition for it, I would probably pass, because I'm like, this is so not me. But there are times when we audition people who are off type. And usually when we do that, we let them know in advance, like, hey, we know this isn't you, but we want to see what you do with it. If that happens, come in and know that you don't have to be this jockey football player. If that happened to me and they're like, oh, we want to try you off type, I'm going to come in and I'm going to be me. And I'm going to give them my truth and my version. Because especially in that case, they're looking for what my version is, or they want to see what my version is. And then I give them that. So come in and bring me your version of the character. Show me, hey, if you hire me, these are the tables that I'm going to, these are the cards I'm going to put on the table. And then great. Let us decide if we want to buy what you're selling, or if we're like, oh, okay, that's not the right store. That's not the right outfit that we're looking for.
That's very cool that you brought that up, because I know a lot of actors, including my kid, who have been brought into auditions where they're looking at the breakdown and they're looking at themselves and going, Why am I here? Why did I spend all this time memorizing all these sides and drive across town? Because
it's sit in traffic.
Sit in traffic. Can we talk? Because it's completely clear to me, looking at this breakdown, that what the heck are they doing here? This can't be me.
And some of that is us having to cast a wide net. Some of it is us maybe protecting ourselves a little bit, in the sense of, if we want to talk about diversity, yeah, we want diverse, but we're going to audition some, like, clutch, like, Caucasian actors that we know are really good. So that way, if we can't find the diverse actor, and then all of a sudden, okay, fine, we'll open up to Caucasian. Great. We have these people on backup.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it... I mean, it also, we have to cast a wide net.
Mm-hmm.
We have to see who's the best, because here's the thing. We could... The only time you are literally... you have to cast a certain ethnicity is when you're casting the family. It's the only time you have to. For anybody else, it could be strongly recommended that this needs to be diverse, or that this character needs to be African-American or Asian or Indian or whatever. But it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
It is strongly recommended, but doesn't have to be. So our job in casting is to find the best person for the role. And I think... sometimes casting gets a bad rap, and I think, I can't remember who you were talking to about, but it was about, like, about having more representation in casting, and it starts with casting, it starts with the people, and I'm like, and I remember sitting in my car listening to it, being like, well, don't blame casting, it's not us, like, we're trying.
I don't think it starts with casting, I think it starts further back upstream, I think it starts with representation.
Representation, writers, the network.
We're all,
every party has blood on their hands
a little bit. It's an ecosystem.
Casting, casting primarily, we are probably doing the most to try to get diversity. I can't tell you how many times we have auditioned things like, well, why can't this role be a woman? Why can't this role be this? Why can't it be this? And so we want to bring them choices and say, because our job is we want to find the best actor. If the best actor happens to be Caucasian, and this may be controversial, but if the best actor happens to be Caucasian, screw diversity mandates. Screw it. We found the best actor for this role who will work for this money, who's available on these dates. Like, that's the thing, too, is you think, like, well, why couldn't you just get this person? Well, because we had to shoot it during this week, and they weren't available. And there are so many other conditions that go on it. But also, in one of my films, I have a musical thriller about a serial killer. And the serial killer kills somebody who's African-American, and some people have been like, why are you killing a black guy? And it's like, he's a serial killer, and he kills multiple other people in the film. He wasn't killed because he was black, he just happened to be black. And that actor was a friend of ours, and was available on the 4 random days and 2 of the overnight shoots that we needed to do, and he would do it for us for free, because we were an indie film and had no money. So that's why he got cast, because he was the best person for the role that fit all of the demands that we need. And that's just what it is. We in casting want to find the best person for the role. I don't care what you look like. I don't care. I just want you to be it.
Yeah.
And if you're it, then that's all that matters.
I love that. I love that. And actually, Tenzing Norgay Trainer is the most brilliant example of this in every different way. I love him too. Like, I just love him as a human, also as an actor. But he came in and he's half South Asian and doesn't really look like the rest of the family. Also, he's insanely bright. And that role, nobody knows this because of the way it went, but was originally written for somebody who was not very smart. Mm-hmm. Like, that role was like, you know, the little brother who's, you know, not very smart. Well, Tenzing stepped in, and he was so profoundly intelligent and blew everybody away so much. They're like, okay, we don't care that he doesn't look like the rest of the family. And he's so darn smart, we're just going to rewrite the role because we love him that much.
Because he's it.
Because he's it. Because he's the one.
There's, I tell people, like, what we're looking for in casting. For anybody who watched the NBC show Smash, did you ever watch Smash?
I loved Smash. I watched it with Dove. She was in high school when that thing came out.
I feel so old.
Oh, stop it.
I loved Smash, too, and there is a prime example of the show. What they would do is they'd be in the rehearsal hall or in the rehearsal space, and you would see them rehearsing it in their, you know, rehearsal clothes. They would do a reverse on, like, Deborah Messing and Christian Borle. They'd be sitting there and they'd be watching, and then they do a reverse again, and then they're up on the Broadway stage and they're performing it in full hair and makeup and wardrobe. And the device that they're using is that's Deborah Messing and Christian Borle seeing the production in their minds actualized.
Yep.
That's what I want. When I auditioned Peyton for Andy Mack, she came in our, there was construction on the subway outside and, like, it was loud and it was probably hot and, like, but she came in and she was so it that, like, when we did the scene where in the pilot episode where she's out in the park and she just did Frisbee with Jonah and she's, like, yelling at Bex, like, reading with her, I'm like, we were on that field having this argument. Like, we weren't in this office anymore. We were on the field. Like, I literally just saw it with her. And that's what you want when you audition people. Like, you want to just see the scene with them.
Oh.
And that's what we're looking for. And the thing is, that's not going to be it you every time.
Nope. No matter how brilliant you are.
And it, because, again, there are so many other variables that come into play, but that's what we want. And if you can just keep delivering your version of what you're doing, that's the most important thing.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I think everybody can just, like, take that to heart. So, Stephen, before we let you go, let's talk about where people can find you and follow you.
Oh, no.
Twitter and Instagram.
I want to make a really inappropriate joke, but I won't. I won't do it.
Don't do it. This is G-rated.
It's the comedian inside of me. I just want to make all these jokes. So I am available. I'm Tech Avail on Twitter. Twitter. You're right. You can pin me. I'm available on Twitter. I'm at ST O'Connor, O'Connor with an O. I'm on Instagram at Steven Tyler O'Connor, Tyler with an O, O'Connor with an O. And you can find me on my website, stoc.biz, which stands for, like, Steven Tyler O'Connor.biz. Or you can, if you're feeling up to it, you can try steventyleroconnor.com. Hope you spell the name right.
It's a lot of O's.
There's a lot of O's. You can also find me on, like, IMDb, and I have links to that. But my website has links to my Facebook fan page, my Twitter page, my Instagram, that I try to really cultivate as being, whenever I find interesting articles about the industry and whatnot, like, I am very much active on that. And I'm on my website, and on my website has links to my films and my movies, and something that we didn't really talk about is with my films, I think I have an interesting experience about it. So, but all my links to my films and all that are on my website, and you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and IMDb.
We're going to have you back as another time as a filmmaker.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm here.
Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. Or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to hollywoodparentsguide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.